The Fan on Demand.
Sammet and Jeff Blair. They're both named Jeff. They both like sports. That's pretty much where the similarities end. This is the Jeff Blair Show with guest host Jeff Sammet on Sportsnet 590. The Fan.
Sportsnet 590, The Fan. I'm Jeff Sammet. So will the Blue Jays have their AAA team in Buffalo next season? Mike Harrington of the Buffalo News joins us now. And, Mike, there's a 15-day window starting September 16th in which the Bisons could sign up to be the Blue Jays' AAA affiliate. Bisons manager Wally Backman basically told you he doesn't envision the Mets coming back. Do you?
No, at this point, I really don't, Jeff. It's one of those situations where, you know, the New York Mets did a lot of good things this year in trying to build a team in Buffalo. They signed a lot of free agents. It hasn't worked out through injuries at the big club and injuries down here. And in 4 years, they're about to have their third losing season. They might have their second last place season. And Triple-A baseball, for the most part, is an event, and people go to the game. But in Buffalo, it is a little different. It's a major league town with two major league teams. You can't, you know, really be non-competitive for this long. And I think despite many of the good things the Mets bring to the Bisons, they're going to look elsewhere. And I think there's no question about it. They're going to sign up with the Blue Jays.
So is that why Buffalo has soured on the Mets? Is it just lack of success?
I think that's a big factor. I think realistically, it's an American League East town. Since the story broke when I talked to Wally Backman Sunday in Pawtucket, I've gotten a tremendous amount of email and tweets from people pointing out they see more Blue Jays gear in the stands than they do Mets gear anyway. There was a fellow yesterday, we had an afternoon game, a guy sitting in the front row wearing a Ricky Romero jersey and a Jays hat. Now, maybe he wants to change that jersey based on last night, but nevertheless, you know, the same guy apparently has been seen in a Batiste to Jersey, and there are other people walking around in Jay's stuff. It's an American League East town. The Bisons can draw from Southern Ontario. I think at this point, it's the way they should go.
There's been a reluctance in the past for the Bisons to be a Blue Jays affiliate. What has changed? What happened then?
Well, you know, I even wrote a column about it in 2008, and I thought the Mets were the right decision at the time for the Bisons. I thought the situation with the Bills and in the Bills and Toronto series was a negative. You don't want to align with Toronto when Toronto might be trying to take your NFL team, but I really don't think that's a factor anymore. I mean, Toronto doesn't have a stadium for an NFL team, for one thing. There's a lot of backlash because of the Maple Leafs and their fans coming to town for Sabres games, and there's a lot of people don't want to be, quote-unquote, minor league to Toronto in anything. But I think at this point we're looking at a situation where the Bisons have seen their attendance drop precipitously the last couple of years, about 1,200 a game, and it seems like this is the right time. The Blue Jays certainly would like to get out of Las Vegas, and there's much more connection now with the Bisons and Blue Jays. The connections to John Farrell, to his Cleveland days, to Torrey Lovullo, a great manager and player here, and to Marty Brown, who won a championship here in 2004, is managing in Las Vegas now, ostensibly could be the manager in Buffalo next year. Those things are very attractive to people here.
So, I mean, I get this tweet, at Jeff Sammet 590. So did you as well, Mike, at BN Harrington. This is coming from Ian Titchell, saying, the idea of the Bisons being a Toronto farm team makes me want to puke.
There's no question there's going to be some of that backlash. Some of it's related to the Sabres situation. Some of it's related to the Bills situation.
Yeah.
But I do think over time, you know, that can be mitigated by, you know, folks from Southern Ontario coming to see games in Buffalo, from folks in Buffalo getting to go up to the Rogers Centre when a player is called up. I mean, the Mets games are all on SNY, so we can all see them in Buffalo. But the Blue Jays games are available on MLB.com. They're available on the extra innings package. They're not blacked out here. So people will be able to follow the players as they go back and forth. And eventually, you know, I think people will get over that factor. I mean, I admit freely that was a big hang-up on my part 4 years ago, but I think times change.
Do you expect really that much of a boom in ticket sales and Canadian interest, as some do, as a result of this alliance?
I don't expect a boom per se. I mean, the Bisons have some internal issues they have to deal with to help their attendance situation as well. But they can market certain things they can't do right now. You can have, let's say, Welland's Night at the ballpark or St. Catherine's Night at the ballpark and try to get some large groups from Southern Ontario because you're watching the farm team of the Blue Jays. You certainly can't do that now with the New York Mets or, for that matter, with any other team they were affiliated with.
You talk about internal issues that they could rectify in terms of attendance and interest. What could they do?
Well, I mean, the stadium has become too large. You know, it was built with Major League in mind. They could do some different initiatives in ticketing, things along those lines. They could do a better job kind of reconnecting to the history of their franchise. They've had some lost opportunities here in their 25th anniversary year. They spent much of their energy on the AAA All-Star game. So I'm actually soliciting suggestions and thoughts from fans right now for an upcoming column because after 25 years, you know, you always want to reevaluate your operation. And the Bisons have been very good of taking stock of what they have every year and looking at it. And, you know, I think this would be a good time as they go to a new affiliation to kind of refreshen some of the things they present every night.
Now, what's the talk been like for the last couple of days, Mike, you know, in the city of Buffalo about this possibility? What's it been like? I mean, has there been as much venom as we alluded to earlier on towards the city of Toronto?
No, I really think that you get a certain pocket of that from certain individuals, but I think what you're seeing is people realize it's time for the Bisons to make a change, that the New York Mets situation just has not worked out as a lot of people hoped. And, you know, at the start of this year, there was some optimism with this club, and they need a change. And I think people realize, I've set it out for people pretty clearly, there are no other options unless you want to go with the Astros or the Padres or the Brewers, teams that would have no connection to Buffalo whatsoever. So I think people are pretty much resigned that it's going to be the Toronto Blue Jays, and a lot of people are very enthusiastic about it, and the people who aren't as enthusiastic about it, I think, get the sense they're just going to have to live with it and see how it goes.
Mike Harrington of the Buffalo News with us on the Jeff Blair Show. I'm Jeff Sammet, Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Well, Mike, let's flip it. I mean, we talk about how, you know, what could be a boom in ticket sales or not from a Canadian interest. Well, let's flip it. I mean, do you think that with the Toronto Blue Jays having their AAA team in Buffalo, that you'd get a lot more Blue Jays fans in Buffalo, perhaps making the drive to the Rogers Centre to check out the Toronto Blue Jays? I mean, could the Blue Jays see a spike in attendance as a result of this?
I don't think there's any question about it. I mean, the Blue Jays certainly draw very well from Buffalo when the Yankees are in town, even when the Red Sox are in town. It is, you know, for people who live in Niagara County and Northern Erie County, you know, only about a 90-minute drive. So now all of a sudden, when a guy like Matt Harvey is a AAA All-Star pitching for the Bisons and gets called up and makes his Major League debut with the New York Mets, imagine if you had a similar prospect called up to make his Major League debut for the Toronto Blue Jays. You would get a certain number of Buffalo people going up there to check that game out, even if the Blue Jays were playing, say, a non-attractive team like Kansas City. So it would make a difference for the Blue Jays in that standpoint. You can cross-market between the two teams, season ticket holders. You can have ticket deals. There are a tremendous number of marketing possibilities here. Both teams are probably going to want to take advantage of.
In terms of Bison's history and looking back, and looking at the relationships they've had with Major League clubs, what year might you look back on, or relationship would you look back on and say, yeah, that was as good as it got for the Buffalo Bisons?
Yeah, there's no question about it. When they were with the Cleveland Indians from 1995 to 2008, they went to the playoffs 9 times in 11 years from 95 through 2005. They won 3 league championships in 97, 98, and 04. That's really going to be the creme de la creme. That's going to be hard to duplicate. So many things went right for both the Bisons and the Cleveland Indians in those years. And people understand you're not going to win every year, but the New York Mets haven't even come close. The Bisons did not go to the playoffs the last 3 years with Cleveland. 4 straight with the Mets now. That's 7 straight non playoff years here. That's been a big factor in some of the frustration, but the Cleveland Indians really did a great job here, and I think that's a big reason the Blue Jays are attractive, because John Farrell and Torrey Lovullo have a tremendous connection to that, and Alex Anthopoulos brings back the kind of thought process of development that Mark Shapiro and Neil Huntington had in those years.
You know, you can't talk to a Toronto radio station here, especially how much we love hockey, and not talk a little bit of hockey. So I have to quickly ask you, Shane Doan, 4 years with the Buffalo Sabres, that going to happen?
Good Lord. I mean, what a ridiculous offer. I mean, come on. I think he's a great player they could use in their locker room for leadership. But, you know, if the Buffalo Sabres are going to pay Shane Doan $30 million for 4 years, I mean, why are we potentially having a lockout here? Mm. You know, what are the other owners in the NHL going to think of Terry Pegula if that deal goes down? Yeah. I just think it's an absurd contract for a guy whose production is dropping, whose age is climbing, and obviously wants to be in Phoenix and doesn't want to be anywhere else. If he comes here, you're going to say, well, he just did it as a money grab.
Yeah. Well, and again, it's not just the term and the money. It's the timing of it all as well. It surprises me. It surprises me that there's any hockey activity at all in the wake of a possible NHL lockout. But to see a deal like that made by a team like the Buffalo Sabres at this time was just a shock to me.
Well, Jeff, keep in mind, a lot of this broke last night. We reported this on August 4th. This has been talked about for several weeks. This is nothing new. This 4-for-30 has been out there for Shane Doan as a standing offer for quite a while. It's not like it just came out in the last day or two.
Mm-hmm.
But he hasn't taken it yet. You know, you'd think if he was that interested, he'd have already taken the deal, and he hasn't. So I think the whole thing is kind of silly. It would be shocking to me if it actually went down that way.
It's funny because it's seemingly has been, I've lost track, but like, what, 6-7 weeks ago when Shane Doan was talking about, yeah, I'm going to make my decision on Monday. I'm going to talk to the Phoenix Coyotes, make my decision on Monday. And it's like, wow, we're like, what, 2 months later and nothing's happened.
And one last point here.
Yeah.
It was very public. He went and visited. He has not visited the Buffalo Sabres. His agent has talked to Darcy Regier several times. Mm. Shane Doan has not visited the Buffalo Sabres at all. To me, that's a key point.
Yeah, well, that absolutely is. Mike Harrington, Buffalo News. Thanks for this. And our mutual friend in Buffalo legend, Nashville Predators voice, Pete Weber, he says hello as well.
The man, the myth, the legend. He is a Hall of Famer in Buffalo baseball and a Hall of Fame person. Thank you very much, Jeff.
Absolutely, Mike. Thank you very much. 11:13 on the Jeff Blair Show. I'm Jeff Sam at Sportsnet 590. The Fan. So talk about Steven Strasburg with the Washington Nationals and, well, a lot of noise around him, and not so much in a good way. The guy is certainly impressive and has come back from injury and Tommy John and has gotten back to being the Steven Strasburg that we had hoped he would be. And yesterday with a dominant 6-inning, 10-strikeout performance and a 4-1 victory for the Washington Nationals. And now they've got a season-high 7-game lead in the National League East over the second-place Atlanta Braves. But you know, and Strasburg was fantastic, 97 miles per hour for on his fastball for strikes. He was fantastic, and he was really locked in. And he was hitting his spots. He looked great. No sign of fatigue whatsoever. And you know, we're past mid-August. So there is, some thought here and a lot of talk about what the Nationals are going to be doing with Strasburg as far as his innings limit is concerned as we come closer and closer and closer. He's got 145 and a third innings, and the Nationals don't want to go beyond what their innings limit would be, and that might happen before the end of the season. It might shut him down at that time, regardless of getting into the playoffs or not. So we're going to talk about that. And we're going to get the perspective of Charlie Slows. He's going to join us. He's a radio voice of the Washington Nationals. And, we're going to ask him if he agrees with that move, if he's been critical with that decision, if perhaps that decision is going to fall by the wayside, if they're going to kind of think a little bit differently as they get a little bit closer to the playoffs, and how Steven Strasburg is handling and feeling about this whole situation. So we'll get the inside scoop with Charlie Slows, the Nationals radio voice. We'll talk about Steven Strasburg as the hour continues on the Jeff Blair Show. I'm Jeff Sam at Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Prices like no other, from a club like no other, The Fan Club. Log on to sportsnet590.ca. Trending now on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. The Tigers walk past Ricky and the Jays. George LaRocque tries to unify CHL players. And Roger's not thinking MLB, but are the Astros thinking Roger? It's all trending now on Sportsnet 590. The Fan.
At 590 The Fan, I'm Jeff Sammet, in for Jeff Blair with you until noon. Steven Strasburg, innings limit. He looked fantastic last night, and the debate continues. It's Mike Rizzo, the GM of the Nats, doing the right thing and capping the number of innings that Strasburg has this season. Charlie Slows calls the game for the Nats on the radio and joins us now on the Jeff Blair Show on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. First off, Charlie, Strasburg looked fantastic yesterday. And I think what's the most impressive thing, aside from his 97-mile-per-hour fastball for strikes, I might add, and, you know, how he was able to go fairly deep into the ballgame, was the fact that there was a rainout in the middle of it, and he came right back.
Yeah, we were really, you know, almost surprised what the cutoff would be. We found out later on 1 hour was the cutoff, and Mike Rizzo credited the grounds crew once the rain stopped really getting the field ready quickly. So he was back out there throwing that first pitch at 51 minutes. But, you know, with the restrictions and the concern about him, we were almost surprised he came back at all. But the other situation was the pitching staff, the bullpen was heavily used with 8 innings of relief the night before in the 13-inning game. They had pitchers who had thrown several days in a row, a couple of pitchers with high pitch counts in relief a couple of days in a row. So if he had come out at that point after 2 2/3 innings, we were trying to figure out how they were going to piece together the rest of the game, what kind of shape they would be in if for some reason they went extra innings again. So they needed innings from the starter last night, and he came back and was as good or better after the rain delay. I think it was, you know, arguably his best performance of the year. His stuff was ridiculous. He came right out of the gate. I think he, with the importance of the game, facing the Braves, trying to open up the first-place lead, I think he was a little amped up because in recent starts, his fastball velocity was 94, 95, which is nothing to, you know, shake a stick at.
We would take that, yeah.
You know, but last night he came right out of the gate, and he was 97, 98, 99. The curveball was a knee buckler last night for the right-handed hitters. And then the changeup looked like somebody else's splitter going down and away from left-handed hitters. Not a changeup at 92 miles an hour.
You know, obviously the Nats doing so well. I mean, geez, they've got the 31 games over 500. Geez, they're doing so well. And they've got a lead over the Braves in the East like they've never had before, a season high, a 7 games over second-place Braves. It's so tempting to want Steven Strasburg to go past that that innings limit that the Nationals might have on him. I'm sure, obviously, this is something that you guys have talked about time in and time out. But I'm curious to know, Charlie, where are you standing on this issue? Do you feel that the Nats are doing the right thing for Strasburg and the long-term health of Steven, or are you looking at this and saying this is a dream season? They got to keep this going any way they can.
It's a dream season for sure. I think everybody thought the club could be better, but I don't think you can anticipate in February or March that you're going to be 31 games over 500 when you get to the late stages of August 22nd. I heard a new suggestion this morning. Now that the team's this far ahead, why don't they just have Strasburg pitch 2 innings? Have some kind of limit of like 30 pitches, you know, like as if it was spring training. Instead of shutting him down, just have him do that, piggyback somebody after him. And, of course, if you get to September 1st, another week or so, you could easily do that. You know, start him, have him pitch 2 innings, come out of a game, bring in John Lannon, and have him go, and see if you can get him to the postseason with any amount of innings left. I would hesitate to broach that one to Mike Rizzo. I mean, they have this plan in place that they weren't going to deviate from day one. I would think if somebody suggests that to me this morning that they've already heard that one. And you get to September, I think they feel like it's even if you were to do something like that, you're still not having him prepared the same way for a game that he would if he were going to throw 100 pitches.
Yeah.
You're still having him throw the side session in between in preparation for that start. And it's not just what they look at as the innings limit for the year based on what he's doing in games. They've factored in everything else, the long toss, all the things that you do to prepare are all part of using that pitching arm. And so they factored all of that in. So I don't know if even something like that to save a little bit now to get him deeper into the season. I mean, Davey Johnson's done that during the year in games where he wasn't sharp or the team was behind. He'd get him out after three or four innings and say, you know, there were a few starts like that. I'm trying to buy you, when you add up a few of those, trying to buy you another start later into the year.
Right.
So at this point, he threw six innings last night. He's at, 145 in the third innings?
Yes, yeah.
The original innings limit was somewhere around 160, and then people were reporting that Mike Rizzo said it was 180, and then he said he never said that, but that it's really, it's not a hard and cold 160. It's an eye test for him as to when he feels Steven is, you know, running out of gas or shows signs of lack of command or anything like that, that they would make this decision to do it. Last I was told, still somewhere around the second week of September, and that there, if there are two or three starts of his left for the year, that they would go to John Lannon. I don't know what can change that. I don't know that they'll consider changing anything up to this point. They don't want to shut him down and ramp him back up. If there is any idea that, to me, that's possibly believable, it would be the idea that a friend suggested to me this morning.
Sad.
Why not just have him throw about 30 pitches, 40 pitches a start, and get him out and try and see if you can, you know, stretch him to the postseason?
Well, what about skipping starts?
No, they won't do that.
No.
They won't do that.
Not at all?
No. I mean, I don't know. If he skipped a start and then you had him just throw an extra side session and you limit amount of pitches in the side session, have him do it on the same days as if he would have pitched, does that do the same thing as what my friend's talking about, limiting him to just 30 or 40 pitches per start and keeping him pitching every 5 days?
So it's, you know, we get this here. Obviously, it's sports fans passionate and they want to see their...
Nobody can believe it. That's the thing.
Yeah, well, they want to see their stars out there. So, I mean, Charlie, I mean, are fans kind of looking at this and they just hate Mike Rizzo right now?
No.
Are they thinking with their hearts or with their heads?
You have both.
Yeah.
But they've presented this case for a long time, and I think Nationals fans are trusting Mike Rizzo with what he's done to help build this franchise into a winner, and has done it fairly quickly.
But, I mean, if they're out in the first round of the playoffs, is everybody going to look at Mike Rizzo and say, why did you shut down Steven Strasburg? I guess you're going to get a few people saying that for sure.
Right, but, I mean, at the same time, okay, say you pitch him and he gets to the postseason and he gets lit up.
Right.
I mean, what can you say then? And, you know, then Mike Rizzo can say, see, he was out of gas.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody's really going to know.
Yeah.
I mean, you have a guy with no innings limit, no limitations, that's pitching like Strasburg the entire year, going in just and could stink it out in the playoffs. Mm-hmm. You just don't know.
How's Strasburg feeling about all this? Is he kind of being tight-lipped about it?
No, his comments after the game were last night were great. He goes, look, nobody comes to me to talk about it. Nobody addresses it with me. He said, so there's two things that I can do. He goes, I could go on the internet and read anything and every argument about why I should pitch or why I shouldn't pitch. He goes, or I could continue to do what I'm doing, prepare, make my start every 5 days, and watch the Golf Channel.
Well, he's got a good head on his shoulders about that. That's pretty good. I like that. That's great. Charlie Slows, great talking with you. I really appreciate this, and thanks for shedding some light on this. I'm sure something we're going to talk about as the season continues.
I wish I could jump on some of these talk shows that I'm getting requested for all over the United States and parts beyond, like this one, into Canada and say, hey, they're going to do this or they're going to do that or they've changed their mind or they're, you know, as far as I know, they're sticking to their guns. When they feel the time is right, they're going to shut them down and have a press conference and say, this is what we're doing.
Well, your phone will be ringing off the hook at that time, I'm sure, Charlie. Thanks a lot, pal. Appreciate it.
You got it.
There's the voice of the Nationals on the radio, Charlie Slows, joining us on Sportsnet 590. The Fan, want to open it up to you now at 416-870-0590, 1-888-666-0590, or star 590. What would you do with Steven Strasburg? I mean, are the Nationals handling this the right way, sticking by their guns, and GM Mike Rizzo saying it's a look, the speculation as to maybe 160 to 180 innings for Steven Strasburg, and they're heading towards the playoffs. And a lot of Nats fans would want to see Strasburg pitch well into the playoffs and kind of lead the way. I mean, this is their ace. This is their guy. This is the player that they're banking on taking them to the promised land alongside of Bryce Harper. It's a tough decision, but Mike Rizzo, Nationals GM, is making that, and he's sticking to his guns, and he's gonna stop him at 160 to 180 innings. Is that the right move for the Nationals and for Steven Strasburg? I mean, it's a question of looking short-term or long-term, but this is indeed a dream season for the Washington Nationals. I mean, I was talking about it with Charlie. I mean, 31 games above 500. They've got a seven-game lead now on the Braves. Nobody would have anticipated that the Nationals would be in the position that they are in right now. One of the best teams in baseball, and led in large part by Steven Strasburg. Is this the right move by the Washington Nationals? 416-870-0590, 1-888-666-0590, star 590. Had Tommy John surgery in 2010. And this really being his first full season in the majors, the Nationals are being very, very careful with their prized commodity here. And I'll tell you, agree or not, you got to respect the Nationals and Mike Rizzo, at least thus far, sticking by their guns. We'll see if that continues to happen. Steve is in Brantford and joins us on Sportsnet 590. The Fan, Steve, is this the right move by the Washington Nationals? I mean, all indications so far, and with a great start last night, perhaps his best of the year, he's looking good.
Well, personally, assuming he has no twinges in his elbows and he feels great, and et cetera, I think it's about the dumbest thing they could do. Yes, they have a young team and a good future, but, you know, there's a bunch of teams that think, you know, they've got a 10-year run or something. And Toronto's firsthand, we know how it's been. After those two World Series, we thought they were going to grow off of trees and that. Mm. And I think it's foolish. You're taking your best pitcher, your best player, period. The guy that is going to, honestly, if they don't pitch him, I don't see them getting far in the playoffs. So you're taking your best asset and you're just shutting him down. It's virtually like throwing in the towel. As I say, if he's whispering that, yeah, my arm is feeling dead, I'm exhausted, but as you say, he had a great start yesterday.
Yeah, he turned it on. He ramped it up, as Charlie was talking about. I mean, he hit 97, 98, 99 on the radar gun.
Exactly, and these pitchers and players in general, I think, are so pampered now. I mean, you look at the Bob Fellers and these guys, Bob Gibson, they were throwing 300 innings, you know, a year. And I can't fathom. I keep thinking they're just trying to play with the competition's head, and he's going to be starting game one. Mm. I cannot believe they would contemplate doing this with a healthy young guy in his prime. And, you know, you look at half these guys that have the Tommy John, they come back and their arms are proven to be stronger. So, I'm shocked by the whole situation. I'd be irate if I was a Washington fan.
Steve, thank you. So there's one vote saying no. Mike Rizzo, the Washington Nationals GM, is absolutely not doing the right thing. 416-870-0590, 1-888-666-0590, or star 590. I mean, for a moment, if you're not already, assuming the majority of you are not, put yourself in a Nationals fan's shoes, be a Nationals fan here, and look at your prized commodity in Steven Strasburg, and you feel that the Nationals are doing the right thing by being very, very careful with him. They made a decision a long time ago, but perhaps as the season has gone on and as they've seen him perform, especially this late into the year last night, maybe those decisions are meant to be changed based on performance and based on the health of the athlete. Are the Nationals doing the right thing with an innings cap? And he's about 15 innings at least away from being shut down for the year. Is this the right move or not for a team that's headed towards the playoffs? 416-870-0590, 1-888-666-0590, or star 590. Follow us on Twitter at JeffSamet590. Send us an email, jeffsamet@sportsnet590.ca. We'll continue the discussion on the Jeff Blair Show. I'm Jeff Samet, Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Like free sports tickets, trips, and memorabilia so you can trick your friends, colleagues, and mistresses into thinking that you're some sort of high roller? Hey, join the club.
Welcome to the club.
The Fan Club. Log on to Sportsnet590.ca. Baseball Central, today at noon. Now, more of the Jeff Blair Show with guest host Jeff Sammet on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
It's Jeff Blair Show. I'm Jeff Sammet, Sportsnet 590. The Fan with you until noon. Baseball Central, Dirk and Sam on deck asking the question. Speaking of baseball, ahead of Tom Tebbit joining us before the end of the show, we'll talk about Milos Raonic with him. But sticking with baseball, if you were the Nationals, would you shut down Steven Strasburg? He's got an innings limit. He's at 145 and a third. Innings limit set to be around 160 to 180. They're a playoff team. They're getting set for it. The Nationals making the right move here and sticking to their guns with their innings limit that they set beginning of the season. Jonathan is in Ancaster, joins us on Sportsnet 590. The Fan. Jonathan, wanted to get your thoughts.
Yeah, if I was the Nationals, I definitely wouldn't shut him down. I think if you want to stick with the innings limit, I'd throw him in the bullpen and just so he has the opportunity to spot start in the playoffs if need be. It can be a long reliever or a spot start in the playoffs if you need. Need a guy. I wouldn't want to shut down your best pitcher, especially when you're right in the heart of it. So.
It's a tough call because he's a young guy, and all of a sudden now you've changed his routine. You've got him in a different scenario. He doesn't know when he's coming into games, so it's maybe that does more harm than good. And I have heard that. And it's not so cut and dry. It's not like no, you don't do that with a starter. You don't do that with a pitcher. It's not that cut and dry. Some can handle it, some can't. And I don't know if Steven Strasburg would be under which category. I don't know which category he would fall into. Jonathan with this tweet at Jeff Sam at 590 saying, not a chance, wouldn't shut him down. They need him for a deep playoff run. At Nicholas McManus saying, no, wouldn't shut him down. I'd flat out release him. What? Release him? He must be talking about Ricky Romero from an earlier conversation. Oh, sarcasm. Ha ha. He hashtag sarcasm. You got me, Nicholas. You got me. Mike is in Mississauga, joins us on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Mike, what would you do with Strasburg if you're the Nats?
How's it going? I kind of agree with pretty much what everybody else has been saying. I wouldn't shut him down at all. I mean, you got the opportunity. You're going to be in the playoffs, and this guy's a big reason why you've got there. The whole point of playing this game is to win.
Yeah.
And now you've got the opportunity. I don't see why you would pass up this opportunity for future opportunities.
But it is at the risk of ruining this guy forever. I mean, that would be the worst-case scenario. And when you're faced with that, I mean, this is what we're going to do this year. I think this is what would be best. I mean, this is something that they talked about throughout the entire offseason. They had doctors. They calculated how much possible work they can get out of the guy. This was something that was deeply discussed and thoroughly looked into. It's not an off the cuff decision. I mean, Mike, I think the way you got to go about this is you got to kind of go with the flow, see how it goes, and say, okay, this is what the plan is, but let's see how we are in August. And if you're looking at the guy, say, well, the guy's fine. There's nothing wrong with him. Well, maybe you got to alter that decision.
Right, well, that's what I mean. I mean, unless he's saying to you, hey, listen, my elbow's bothering me, listen, my shoulder's bothering me, that's a different story. But if all systems are go, I mean, you're assuming that there's going to be more opportunities for them to be in the playoffs, which they might be, but I don't think anyone would fault you for going after the World Series when you actually have a chance to get it.
Mm-hmm.
I think you're more likely to get faulted for shutting a guy down when you have an opportunity to do some winning and then never getting back there again. Right, you're assuming a lot by shutting him down if he doesn't have problems.
Right, Mike, thank you for the phone call. And I wonder how Nationals fans would feel if Strasburg were shut down and the Nats were immediately eliminated from the playoffs. And everybody's going to be saying, what would have happened if Strasburg had been in there? If the Nationals, he was looking fine if the Nationals had kept going. But, on the flip side, as Charlie Sloz had said, the radio voice of the Nationals, he had mentioned it earlier. He said, well, I mean, on the flip side, what if they ignore what the plan was and, they put him in there and he blew out his arm? I mean, you'd be second-guessed no matter what. I mean, best-case scenario, They bail on the plan. They end up winning the World Series with Steven Strasburg. And he goes on to have a great career. But obviously, we're not going to know that for a very, very long time. At Brent Freiberger, the tweet, at Jeff Sam at 590, saying, if you have the chance, you take it. Ask Philly and Texas fans how many World Series they thought they would win. You got to go for it. Juan Ito, 1975, saying, this is ridiculous if they shut down Strasburg. Who knows if the Nats / Expos will get that chance again. If I were him, I would be miffed. Maybe deep down, he is because he's a competitor and wants to be out there. Gord is in Toronto and joins us on Sportsnet 590, the fan. Gord, what would you do with Strasburg?
Jeff, thanks. What do you mean if they shut him down, they might miss the playoffs? No.
Not miss the playoffs. I said eliminated from the playoffs early.
Okay.
Yeah.
Number one, it doesn't matter whether they shut him down or not. I think the argument's ridiculous because they're going to win their division whether they shut him down or not. They could shut him down tomorrow. They're 7 games ahead. Mm-hmm. I know there was a team 13 games ahead that blew it in August. They'll win the division with him or without him.
Yes.
And number two, he's going to play in the playoffs. So what does it matter if they shut him down?
No. That's not a guarantee that he's going to play in the playoffs.
Are you saying that they're shutting him down for the year? No. My understanding is shutting him down till the end of the regular season.
No. There is no plan at all of saying, all right, you know what? 145 and a third innings. What? You got about 2-3 starts left in you. All right, we're going to shut you down. We're going to start you up again in playoff time. We talked to Charlie about that earlier this hour. Yeah.
Well, I think they are, but it won't matter anyways because the Cincinnati Reds are going to win the National League.
Reds fan, are you?
Yep.
I thought so. Gord, thanks, pal. Appreciate it. I want to go to Stephen Hamilton, who joins us on the Jeff Blair Show, Sportsnet 590. The fan, Steve, your thoughts on Strasburg. What would you do if you were the Nats?
Jeff, I don't think you should come into work tomorrow because...
I'm not, actually. Thanks, Steve, though.
You might get hurt.
Yeah.
So I don't want you to come into work tomorrow because you might blow out your elbow.
Yeah.
Look, Jeff, this is the most ridiculous thing. You know... To say to Steven Strasburg, oh, well, you know what? You're more important than the franchise? Give me a break. What are you saying to the other 25 guys on that ball team that have slugged their guts out all year? Oh, well, our franchise player, we are so concerned that we'll throw away the World Series. And you know what? You can't assume an injury. And if you start going down this road, then goodness knows what does this hold for Major League Baseball in the future?
Well, Steve, obviously, doctors have talked to the Nats and they've said, I'm not defending them because I agree with you to a certain extent. I think you got to kind of roll with it and not make a decision in April about what you're going to do in August or September. But obviously, they've had doctors say, look, this is how much labor he can put in. And if he goes beyond this, there's a really high risk of him having a reoccurrence to that injury.
Tommy John said that he had the same operation. He's pitched over 200 innings the next year.
Yeah, but, you know...
The World Series is a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity.
Oh, Steve, I hear you. Steve, I absolutely hear you, and I appreciate the call. I absolutely hear you. I think you got to kind of roll with it and make a decision, later on, not stick to your guns from what you decided back in April. I think you got to kind of look at things right now and say, all right, well... let's assess the situation all over again. But last time I checked, Tommy John wasn't a doctor, although I know he's been through a lot. He's not Dr. James Andrews. And obviously they're getting advice from doctors that obviously know what they're doing. And that's they're basing their decision on that advice. So it's an interesting conundrum, and it's something that's going to be talked about over the next couple of weeks, what the Nationals are going to be doing with Steven Strasburg. More tweets coming in at Jeff Sam at 590. Anthony saying, not if winning is part of the equation. Someone deserves to get fired over this. And talking about the decision to shut down Strasburg in about 15 innings or so. Dylan saying, you got to keep Strasburg pitching. If he starts to struggle, shut him down. Rob saying the Nats are basically going to sabotage their playoffs just to save innings. Come on, these pitchers are too pampered. Ross saying, why is it not his choice? Ask Major League ball players who have not won a World Series, would they trade it for one championship? Thank you for the tweets and the phone calls. Sorry to those we could not get to. Hey, it's only a 3-hour show. Tom Tebbit joins us, a Canadian tennis star. Milos Raonic now has an ATP ranking of number 15 heading into next week's U.S. Open. And Aces co-star Tom Tebbit joins us now in studio to discuss. And Tom, Milos, never been ranked higher. I mean, a 16 in the world, 15 for next week. Are you surprised by the number 15 rank at this point? I mean, is this coming a lot earlier than you anticipated in his career?
Not really. I think a lot of us have thought he's definitely top five potential. Mm-hmm. And last year, last year at Wimbledon, just before he got hurt, there was a very experienced tennis writer who had been to 50 Wimbledons.
Mm.
And he predicted that Milos would win Wimbledon within 4 or 5 years.
Wow.
So he definitely has the potential to win a Grand Slam. That's not saying he will win one. So if he's going to win a Grand Slam, he's going to be top five. He's going to have to be 16 in the world at some time.
Yeah.
And, you know, he's 16 now. If he has a good U.S. Open, he can move up a bit more. And he has a few points to defend in the fall because, you know, it goes on a 52-week cycle, so the points you earned last year come off. So he could go down if he did nothing in the fall because he had a few results. But really, the results weren't that big.
Right.
So I think he's got potential to go up in the fall as well. So he has definitely, I think what he's heading for, actually, what he would be aiming for, and it's going to be very tough, is to be in the top eight at the end of the year. Mm-hmm. That would get him to the year-end championships in London in November. So that would really be a heck of an accomplishment.
Ooh, wow.
So I think that's what he's aiming for. But it may be a little bit out of his reach. But I think he's like 13 now or something. So.
Yeah.
He would have to, and that's not on a week-by-week thing. Like, no, 52 weeks, just the points accumulated this year. He's 13, so he'd have to move up five spots or something. But that's not impossible either.
Gotta say, I mean, reaching the quarterfinals, Cincinnati and the Rogers Cup here in Toronto, I was a little bit disappointed because I thought maybe he could go a little bit further. But I have to keep reminding myself, he's only 21.
Well, no, there was definitely an opening here in Toronto, and he got a little bit lucky because he won a match, then he got a walkover and got to the quarterfinals because he had a bye. And losing to Isner, I think a lot of people were looking forward to that match. Two huge servers, and he was up 4-2 in the first set. It kind of looked like he could do it, so it was disappointing.
Yes. First, like 30 minutes or so, he looked good.
Yeah, but I thought the fact that maybe he hadn't played the day before because he'd had I think it had been a rain out, and then he got the walkover and stuff. He probably wasn't quite as sharp as Isner, who had already played a match earlier in that day, and he doesn't get that tired in matches, Isner, because bam, the points over quickly because he's got such a big serve. So that was tough. And last week was a bit of a disappointment in the fact that he beat three good players. He beat Gasquet, and then he beat Bagdatis, and he beat Burdich. And he was in a real good position to beat Wawrinka.
Yeah.
He was up 4-2 in the second set, tie-breaking up a set, and then maybe just got a little tentative. So that's disappointing because he could have been in the semis, and that would have been a lot more points.
Yeah. Now, he's now experienced the big stage in many different forms recently in front of the home crowd here in Toronto at the London 2012 Olympic Games. He's faced his idol, almost beat Roger Federer. How does he go into next week's U.S. Open mentally? Is he up for the challenge? Because that's always been the question. But I it's less and less as time goes on with Milos.
Well, we'll find out something interesting tomorrow because they do the draw. And as you know, Nadal's not playing. So usually it's the big four, but now it's the big three.
Yeah.
And David Ferrer is in one quarter now. So I think everybody wants to get drawn into David Ferrer's quarter.
Yes.
So you wouldn't have to, you know, you could maybe get all the way to the semifinals without playing one of the top four. So that would be interesting. But I think he's in good shape because the three wins, those are all good players he beat. You know, Gasquet, Bagdatis and Burdich in Cincinnati. That's just last week. So one disappointing match against Wawrinka. He's shown he can play against the best. So I think he's in great mental shape. Actually, little plug here for our show tomorrow night. We have an interview with Milos on our show.
So. Excellent. And he's going to be on Primetime Sports as well later today at 5:20. So we'll kind of get like a bit of the before and after as far as draw is concerned. And very quickly, and we've talked about this before, Tom, and I want to talk about it again. We've seen him rely on that power game to kind of get out of some sticky situations, but his game is a little more well-rounded now.
Yeah, it is. I think in his response to his last couple of matches, I think he regrets not maybe going for it quite as much. He got a little bit tentative, a little bit maybe nervous in a tough situation. So I think that's maybe the barrier he has to break. We've seen it in the close matches with Federer earlier this year.
Mm-hmm.
Just a little something missing right in the key moments. And I think once he gets over that hump, he's going to be pretty tough. Mm-hmm. Not that he isn't tough already.
No, not exactly. Not at all. Aces co-star Tom Tebbit. Listen for it tomorrow night on Sportsnet 590. The Fan. I'm sure we'll chat often next week during the U.S. Open and stuff. So we look forward to that. And thanks for coming on to the show. Appreciate it, Tom.
No problems, Jeff.
All right, 11:55 on the Jeff Blair Show. And a reminder, we've got the Blue Jays Tigers tonight on Sportsnet 590. The Fan, Aaron Laffey, with the start for the Toronto Blue Jays. And the Blue Jays certainly hoping that Laffey could perform just a little bit better than Ricky Romero did yesterday. Certainly was very disappointing, going 5 1/3 innings and giving up 8 walks, not striking out any. And nobody had really, about 9 pitchers or so since 1969 had walked that many and not struck out any. So hopefully Aaron Laffey will fare just a little bit better than Ricky Romero did last night. And if you're wondering about Brett Laurie and whether or not he's going to be in the lineup, no, he's been shut down for the week and rehab, hopefully starting up again next week. So you're not going to see any Brett Laurie as well. So we'll see how the Toronto Blue Jays fare tonight. We'll have the game for you, not only for your viewing pleasure on Sportsnet, but also right here on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Thanks to you for listening, calling, tweeting, and emailing. I'm Jeff Sammet. Off tomorrow, Roger Lajoie in for Jeff Blair for the Jeff Blair Show. And then Mr. Blair can be heard for Bob McCown on Primetime Sports. I'll be back Friday at 9. I'll talk to you then. Baseball Central next on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. And happy 73rd birthday, Carl Yastrzemski.